So the question is, it's really about discipline. How do you get yourself to that point where one can be consistent on a daily basis or on a regular basis in applying the practices of mindfulness, daily meditation, being mindful in one's daily life, etc. Again, with consistency. Another word is discipline or self-discipline. How do I discipline myself? That is often overlooked because on the other aspects of the practices, you know, we read and we understand intellectually and they sound good and we learn how to meditate and practice, and so it all sounds good. But when we bring it into our daily life, or try to bring it into our daily life, we find something else often happens. And so that is a very key point, and is actually a point of practice that goes back to the time of the Buddha. I mean, you're not the first to ask this question or to have this challenge. It is a question for all of us. But let me just step back, because I think it's important that we not just address these things simply as something technologically to fix, you know, which we often do. Hey, you know, just give me the fix and tell me what to do, or give me. But I think it's a bigger issue, because to me, I think you mentioned it. It's about a certain kind of energy. You know, we want to energize our practice. So what energizes it? In my sense, is it is that coefficient of the negative and the positive, the carrot and the stick, to be very simple. In other words, to energize us in anything. Like, let's say you are wanting to learn to play an instrument, right? One of the things that may energize you is it just sounds so terrible in the beginning. You know? All those wrong notes and all those. You know, you're sort of energized to practice more so you can begin to play something that at least sounds less than painful, right? So that is, we could say that is the stick. That is wanting to kind of taking a look at something and going, this is kind of painful, unsatisfying. I really want to, do better. And I think there's a certain kind of energy. It really won't get you all the way far, but at least it'll mobilize you to begin to make some changes, to want to get disciplined, to want to make a change or shift in your life. And again, I think in what we're talking about here, because we're really not talking about something specifically like playing the piano or learning an instrument or a craft, we're learning about what's really about our life. I mean, that's really what this is about. And so often it means that one has taken the time to reflect deeply on one's life condition, and on perhaps on the life condition of those around us, and have realized that kind of the way we have been doing it, or the way most people do it, or the way society deems we do it, has a lot of dissatisfaction, unsatisfactoriness in it. And so if we really aren't willing to admit that, it's hard to mobilize the energy to change. So traditionally, to spend some time in the beginning and throughout kind of reminding ourselves of the the life condition when one is driven by one's endlessly by one's habit energies, when one's involved in life in a way that is creative of kind of negative emotionality and conflict and disharmony. So we have to come to a we got to get that smell enough in our nostrils that we go, I really don't want it. You know, as long as we're not there yet, there may be little to motivate us in that way. So that's kind of, to me, what kind of, in a certain sense, what's driving us in a certain way. to make a change. And then I think on the other side has to be a kind of a felt sense, belief, faith, confidence, trust that somehow, you know, another way is possible. And that we've also spent some time reading about, studying the lives of, meeting people who practice, the great masters to the ordinary ones, and kind of somewhat engaged in the practices and the teachings to a certain degree that one has confidence in it, that one says, wow, this does sound, you know, there is another way, it sounds like a good way, and I can do it. I think when we've done that kind of reflection, then now when we come to mobilizing the energy for daily practice, it's not just imposing. Because I think a key point you said was the daily grind of practice. And even though I don't know you, I don't think I know you, we've just first met, our first interchange, I think that is revealing. What is your name?
Gary.
Yeah, Gary. I think that's revealing that somehow it's sort of like that for you. It's like something you know is probably good for you, but it's not very enjoyable. But still you do it. Right, yeah. So I think that is a place we don't want to get to. The daily grind does not have a good ring to it, does it? Right? I mean, that is the way we talk about certain aspects of our life that really are not the ones we enjoy the most. It's usually, you know, well, I think everybody understands what the daily grind means. And it's certainly, we could in a certain sense say, the reason we are contemplating or embracing kind of a new path is because of the daily grind. And so what we find, we have turned now our spiritual life, our meditative life, into another daily grind. That should be a good sign. There's something wrong here. there's some wrong way that I'm approaching this. That it's beginning to feel like, this is just another one of those things that I got to do, don't like to do, don't get any enjoyment out of doing. No is probably good to me. You know, it's like, yeah, that's not good. All right. So again, we want to buy into the practice. You know, we want to buy into it. We don't want to approach it like it's something that was sold us, you know, and that we're really not happy about. All right, we got to be careful that we really acknowledge that we've bought into it and that we are undertaking it for the reasons that we've talked about earlier. Because I want to change this and because I want to transform into that. Okay? And I know that there is a means to that end. And it involves learning how to be present, learning how to acknowledge the state of my mind, which means the thoughts, feelings, perceptions, storylines, dramas that go on in it. Realize that my current situation is being conditioned by my past and there's no way of getting around it. Acknowledging that my mind is the proverbial monkey mind, which means it is all over the place, untamed, doesn't like to be tamed, doesn't like to be told what to do, likes to do whatever it wants, right? Etc. So that's the capacity to bring our intention, our aspiration, into the context of that reality. Okay, now, when one has come to a place where one understands that repetition is necessary, which is discipline. I mean, discipline is that willingness to understand that if I'm going to get good at anything, I have to repeat it over and over again to get good at it. And so discipline is something that is not just only in the meditative or spiritual life. It's something that really anything in life that we want to develop some competency, some skill at, we have to do it over and over again. But I think what you're getting at is, now what is my approach to that? It's interesting in the Buddhist teachings, that effort of practice, whether it is meditation, whether it is mindfulness, whatever it is, it is translated as joyful effort. How do you like that? The opposite of the daily grind. There's no joy in the daily grind. We might say that is characterized by joyless effort. And some of us know what that's like. If any of us are involved in activities, work, or whatever, in which we find it is a joyless effort, we know that is that's not pain. It's kind of painful, right? So we want our effort to be joyless. Now, Gary may say, but how can it be joyless when it's, right? It's what? It's difficult. The mind doesn't respond to me. It doesn't listen. It doesn't do what I want. I tell it to go here and it goes there, or it's here for 3 seconds and then it's off somewhere else. And before I know it, it's going down pathways that I've, thought I wanted to get away from, right?
I become easily derailed. And when I do become derailed, my life returns to old compulsions. And it's even worse, but when I stay centered in the practice, it's bliss, but man, it's easily derailed.
All right. That's the truth, isn't it? Right? How long have you been, making a serious effort in terms of your transformation and developing a more mindful meditative life?
It's about a year now.
Okay, and you, Gary?
Yeah.
And if I said, Gary, these old pathways and byways of compulsion, how long have you been working on those?
Just 20 years.
Okay, 20 years. So, 1 year versus 20 years,
at least,
let's maybe call it 30 years, and this one you really work consistently all day.
Yes.
Right, as opposed to the mindfulness and the meditative and the self-awareness, it comes and goes. So, Gary, you're a bright guy. Which of these two paths are more powerful? Which are more habitual? What's your default?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, right. Though there it is. That's just the truth, Gary. Right? Okay. So you need to enter this process of transformation understanding that that's what you're dealing with. Right? Which means it's not going to change in a day. Okay. And you don't want to be frustrated by that. Right? You don't want to be disheartened by it. You don't want to be disgusted by it. You want to understand that that's the nature of the beast. Right? You are taming a bucking bronco that has been bucking for 20 or 30 years, and all of a sudden you want to get on it and ride it to wherever you want to go, don't you? Right, I understand that, but Gary, it doesn't work that way. Right? So you want to approach it with an understanding of what you're dealing with, but also a kind of a joy, meaning a joy that, how wonderful that now I finally have some clarity about, what produces well-being and happiness and goodness in life, and clearly see now all those things that I've been doing that produce the opposite. The light bulbs are beginning to go on, and I'm happy about that, right? I'm happy about that. And I understand the job I have to do, but I'm patient. but I know that it will transform a lot quicker if I am consistent. Okay? So you see how there's a setting that ends up with the daily discipline, but if you don't have all this and you're just focusing on that piece, it's difficult. Right? The discipline is taking place within a bigger context of aspiration and intention, as well as understanding the nature of what you're dealing with. So again, if you buy a brand new house where everything is brand new, you don't have much work to do, do you? But if you buy what's called a fixer-upper, you've ever heard of a fixer-upper? You know about fixer-uppers. What do you know about fixer-uppers, Gary?
Well, it's going to take money.
And if you don't have money, it's going to take a lot of what? Sweat equity. All right.
Sweat.
There it is. You're telling me you've been, you have decided to, you want to renovate this house called Gary. But he's an old house, and he needs some significant renovations. So you're going to have to roll up your sleeves and every day apply yourself. Right? And it doesn't have to be a burden. It can be a joy. You can enjoy it. Right? But all you also understand that it's in the beginning, when you first get the old house, it just may be a lot of, we just bought an old church in Tampa, and I'd say the first couple of months it was primarily hauling out trash. Right? Years and years of trash, just cleaning out the garbage. Then we tore down walls and old plaque, you know? A lot of in the beginning of what? Yeah, that kind of work.
I just my competing thought is I'm glad you brought this analogy.
What?
I'm glad you brought up the analogy of the house.
Yeah.
Because my rather relentless thought is, why can't I just move into a brand new one?
No. And the answer is why?
I don't have the money.
Yeah, but that's not the answer.
Why is it people shaking their head?
In terms of Gary, because if you want to awaken Gary, if you want to heal and transform Gary, right? Well, that's Gary. I mean, who else are you going to transform? But this guy right here, and you know him, don't you? He's a piece of work.
Got it?
Got it?
Yeah.
But he's your piece of work. You've created him. You've lived with him. You've indulged him. For how long?
At least 30 years.
At least 30 years. Good. All right. And now you want to take him on a new path. So you got to be patient, you got to be understanding, you got to be compassionate, but be firm. Well, I'm not saying indulge him. You're not going to indulge him anymore. Because you know when you indulge him, when you let go of your mindfulness, when you let go of your capacity to be self-aware, when you forget, where you want to go and where you've been and where you want to go, when you go on holiday, he takes over. And you find yourself right back where you were. Okay. So, you can be a nice guy, understanding, compassionate, all that good stuff, but you have to be also a tough guy, tough love. He doesn't like to be disciplined, does he? But it's good for him. He may not like, to eat right, to exercise, or maybe all kinds of stuff he doesn't like to do. But they're good for him, aren't they?
The
yeah?
The pain factor has now gotten to the point where, look, I've heard the teachings for 25 years,
yeah,
but I never practiced. it's always been intellectual.
You got it.
Constant.
You got it.
Okay.
Do you hear it?
Now, for the last year, I decided to practice.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, oh boy.
Boy, oh boy, what?
I get derailed time and again.
Yeah, again. You need to wake up every day, Gary, and remind yourself where you've been. And you may have to remind yourself 10 times once an hour. You know, you got to remind yourself where I've been. You know, left to my own devices, where my habit energy will take me. You got to remind yourself every hour on the hour where you want to go. And have confidence and trust in that. And then you got to remind yourself to get there what you need to be doing. You know, it's we are retraining this mind of ours. So are we clear?
Yeah, the old habits are the default position.
Right.
And I easily go to the default.
Mm-hmm. You will always go to the default because that is what your habit energy at this point is about. It is you. And it is only Dharma is something that you have brought into your life. These teachings, these ways of understanding, looking things, is not coming from your past. It is something that you have brought into your life through your reading, through your study, through your hearing talks. Right? And so you have to understand that if you want to bring it into your life, which means into reality, right, you have to mix it with all this stuff. But this stuff is very strong and powerful. So if you know that, you understand, I have to be very conscious, especially in the early parts of my practice, to really bring this in strong doses. That's why I need to, you know, remind myself throughout the day where I've been, where I'm going, what I'm doing, why the benefits of the practice. Because, like you say, you may set a great intention, right, to sit down and bump up and do this and that, and 5 minutes later you're off, right? All that speech wasted. Yeah. And that's just the way it is, isn't it? So, but again, now again, there are other things you can do, you know, sangha, group sitting, coming to these things, these things like this, hearing teachings, reading teachings, being around people, this nourishes that new part of yourself that wants to change and learn new ways. So there are things that we can do to nurture it, right? So it's, you know, I mean, there are many people who know that they exercise is good for them, right? A lot of people say what? I'm not self-disciplined, right? It's like, you know, why don't you just buy yourself some weights and work out at home? And people will say what? Well, I'm not self-disciplined. If I go to the gym where other people are doing it, or if I get a personal trainer, you know, then I will do it. So, I mean, that just, it's sort of like that. But hopefully over time, as what has been new is now becoming, more part of our daily life, and as we have become more and more convinced that a daily meditation practice, a mindfulness in daily life, self-awareness and all this is good, I can feel the changes in my life, then it becomes more self-reinforcing over time. But, in the beginning, when we're fragile, when the sprouts of practice, when the sprouts of mindfulness and self-awareness and aspiration are very fragile, we need to be more careful. Okay? Good. Are there other questions about practice? Yes.
When exercising these new ways of practicing, wholesome ways of practicing the mind, we talked about maybe going down a different street. instead of the old street that we've gone down in the past. And I've been practicing that over the last couple of days, and it's just sort of like, almost like a light switch. It's like, okay, should I? And it's,
what?
Should I go down this old habit energy path? And then all of a sudden, no. Okay, it's like almost like a light switch, all right? Is that sort of like, is there more to it? Is there more to it where, you know, okay, stop, breathe, reflect on what's going on? Is there a little bit more in-depth way to go about that?
So I think the question is, you know, many of us spend a lot of our time kind of working with our stuff. Working with it, working through it, working around it. Lots of ways we work with our stuff. And Chris is saying, but isn't there just another way just to kind of blaze a new trail for ourselves, right? And kind of stop, you know, working on healing the inner child and working through our stuff and all that, right? Can we just blaze a new pathway? For the brave and the courageous. You know, there is something to be said about just doing it differently, you know. But that's very hard for many people because they really do not really have a great trust and confidence in that capacity. We are so used to, so identified with our habit energies. We are so attentive to the inner voices within us, right, that have ruled the roost for so long. It is hard for us to imagine not at least dealing with them, struggling with them. yeah. So again, there are no, you know, there are just different ways. You know, there are just different ways. In the Buddhist meditative tradition, there are just many ways. There are aspects of the Zen tradition, you just go right for it. You kind of blinders on either side to all your conditioning, just complete blinders on, and you're just single-pointed focused on just, you know, one thing. And you don't heed anything else. Right? It's called the direct path. Then there is, on the other extreme, we could say the gradual path, where you kind of work through things. Gradually unfolding, gradually peeling back, right? Eventually getting to that same place that the other person with the blinders. The person with the blinders who went directly is still going to have to deal with their stuff, but they deal with it more on the return journey. you know, my sense, the way I teach is combination. You know, which is a little tricky. It means some acknowledgement that there are things that need to be healed. There are things that are very deep and they keep calling us and sabotaging us and twisting us up. And perhaps they do need some attention, some real insightful, mindful, compassionate attention. That process is always in the process of healing, getting over it, not staying stuck in it. So we can get stuck in our healing process for years, dealing with the same stuff over and over again. So it's tricky. Now, why do I say that for the courageous and the brave, that direct path is possible? Because these, you know, the thing that's driving Gary crazy are simply voices in the head. They are thoughts. They are impulses. Right? That's all they are. I was talking to somebody today about their practice, and they described their conditioning as an 800-pound gorilla, which I thought was indicative of how they see their conditioning as something incredibly big and powerful, much bigger and powerful than they are. And I believe that is true, that in that person's perception, that's how they see their conditioning. But on the other hand, in the world of reality, and we always want to live in the world of reality, nobody has an 800-pound gorilla inside them. Unless you're an 800-pound gorilla, I guess. And then if you feel like you have an 800-pound gorilla, that would be based on reality. But for the rest of us, we would say that is a delusion. It is an illusion to imagine that such a thing lives inside us, and it's a delusion to believe it is so powerful that there's nothing we can do about it. Nobody has an 800-pound gorilla inside them. At the very worst, they have what? Thoughts, impulses, memories, feeling states that arise according to causes and conditions. And if one, you know, has a capacity to hold whatever arises in awareness, in mindfulness, in clarity, right? So one sees that a certain mind state has arisen, an afflictive emotion has arisen, right? Anger, irritation, fear, sadness, despair, jealousy, you know what I mean? Whatever it is, or a certain thought of desire, needing, wanting, must have, can't live without, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that these are just simply thoughts. They have no basis in reality. They come and go. They're like flowers in air. They're like clouds in the sky. There's nothing real or solid. So if one has that kind of view and can deal with them in this way and just let them go, that's wonderful. Because they really aren't troubling yourself about. They don't serve you well. But on the other hand, if they still have a very powerful attraction, and they seem, and your mindfulness and your concentration is not strong enough that they do take over, then it's probably worthwhile to stop and do some work with them. So in the end, you know, we need to be really clear about and honest about where we're at. And it's probably more complicated than that. In other words, there are probably certain parts, certain things of our conditioning that we're dealing with where mindfulness and concentration work quite well with. I can just let them go. And they, right? But other ones, I let them go and they're back a minute later, right? You know, they're holding on to me. And those maybe need a little more attention. But I'm all for courage.
You always need a second chance. It always comes back around. Dissolved.
What?
It always comes back around if it hasn't dissolved.
Yeah. Well, it will dissolve in the moment, and if you look at it. See, our problem is we don't stop and look at it. So if you said to me, the problem is my conditioning is like an 800-pound gorilla, right? And if I said to you, could you please look inside your mind and find that 800-pound gorilla? If you all of a sudden stopped and looked inside your mind for an 800-pound gorilla, you would then say to me what? There is no 800-pound gorilla, right? I mean, you didn't have to be a genius. You just had to be willing to what? Stop. And turn and look into your mind and see is what's really, you know. People talk, you know, I mean, like Gary. I mean, can you believe it? Gary, who's probably a bright guy, he says, absolutely, which is probably his biggest problem. right? Gary feels that his habit energy is driving him, right? It feels very powerful. But I would say to you, Gary, next time you feel that habit energy strongly driving you in a certain direction, to a certain kind of action or acting out, to a certain kind of speech pattern, you know what I mean? To a certain, if you can just stop and name it and turn around and look right at it, this driving force, right? What do you think you'll see?
Well, I was listening to this gentleman's question and response, and I see that I have some psychological realities that have not, or emotional content that has not been processed.
Well, let's not even talk about processing it. All you want to do is see it for what it is. So just give me an example. What could be one of these psychological processes? Just name me one of your psychological processes.
Fear.
Okay. Do you have fear in you?
Yes.
All right. Do you have it in you now?
No.
So fear comes and goes?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not something stable and real and solid. It just comes and goes.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice to know.
Mm-hmm.
Right? For starters. Isn't that nice to know for starters? All right. Now, if I said to you, Gary, if you stopped next time fear arises and just hold it in mindfulness, which means you have the capacity of knowing that fear is in you, and you say to yourself, I am aware there is fear. Right? And you just hold it. You don't do anything with it. You just make that the subject of your meditation, the subject of your mindfulness. And you just look at it. What do you think you're going to see? Look at your fear. Directly look at it. What is it? What is fear? What is it?
An emotion.
Those are words. What is it? When you look right at it, what do you see?
I don't know.
Good. Gary, that's it. That's wonderful. Now you can start wising up. Because all of a sudden you realize, I don't know. Because we've never stopped and really used our powers for self-awareness to look where? Into our own mind. We're looking everywhere else, aren't we, Gary? We're out here looking around at everything. We're on our phones, we're on our computer, we're on our PDAs or whatever they're on. What are these things? We're always looking outside, right? We're always looking. We don't stop and go, you know, what is fear? It's been running me. How long it's been running you?
Oh,
yeah. And you're right. And you're saying, you just said the truth. I don't know what it is. You see, you thought by calling it emotion that would mean something. That's just a word. That doesn't tell you anything, does it? It doesn't tell you what it is. No. So you, next time fear arises in you, you make that the subject of your meditation. What is it? As an experience, what is it? Is it something solid? How big is fear? How big is it? Yeah, you don't know. That's wonderful. You have the first beginning capacity of getting wise in your old age. And it begins with your willingness to say what you just said. I don't know. I don't know. And I'm not going to be satisfied with words anymore. I want to know. Because this thing has been driving me. I've been running from it since childhood. Okay. You know, it's... Right? You see it? You know? I talked to somebody today who's been running from an 800-pound gorilla all his life. You know, you might want to stop one day and turn around. He might have dropped out of the race 30 years ago. You know, I mean, you just, you know, we never turn around. You know, stop. That's what this is about. Stopping and looking deeply to see what's really there. That's what meditation. What's real? What's really going on? Not what I think is going on, not what I imagine is going on, right? But what's really going on? So, Chris, I mean, if you really want not to keep recycling through the same old stuff, right? But to really say, I want to walk a different way in this life, right? Then you have to be really clear what that way is. And you have to have full confidence in it. Right? And you have to realize, I am going to walk that road and not the road of my conditioning. Which means there'll be constant choice points. Right? Conditioned mind will say, punch him in the nose. Right? You know what I'm saying? I'm just using it as a metaphor. You know, I mean, our conditioned mind, when it has a certain emotion, has a certain way of responding, right? So that's one voice. Angry, punch him in the nose. Settled. But another way says what? Just leave it. Let it be. Which one are you going to trust? One is the voice you know, sounds so right, normal, and the other voice is the voice you've committed to. If you can walk that road, which is the road of conscious intention, you know, over time, when you see the benefit of that, over time that will become your conditioned voice. That will become the strong voice. But in the beginning, you have to walk it on trust and, you know, trust, confidence. It's going to seem strange, a little weird. Good, because it's kind of new, right? To do it differently. But a good way. You know, it's interesting, in the tantric tradition, they have a thing which is very guru-centric, centered on the guru and the teacher. The practitioner always imagines, visualizes that their teacher is always with them. And in the tantric tradition, you know, you see the teacher as like the Buddha, you know, I mean, a highly, you know. And so, you're always imagining that your teacher is always with you. Which again, when you're making choices in life, should I do this or do that, to be in the presence of your teacher may inhibit you from doing certain kind of acting out. Right? If you thought your teacher was right there. So that's also helpful. Time. Any just quick last minute things we didn't get to? Good. Well, thank you for your questions. We'll stop here.